This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello and Happy New Year. This is Scott Wells with the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, this week we are going to follow up from something that began towards the end of last year, whenever I had solicited people to tell me their stories about getting started late in life. It seems that most magicians, myself included, had a magic kit or something when you were a child, and that kind of fascinated you. In some cases, people went on and became magicians from there. Others, like myself, kind of put it aside and then later came back to it in later life. But there are those people who actually didn't know anything about magic until later in life. But the point is, I wanted to hear stories from those people who were starting late in life, or as we might call them, late bloomers, that they decided that this is something that appealed to them for whatever reason. It came into their life, and it came into their lives in different ways, and you'll hear that from the stories that we hear here this week. So again, there were several people who had gotten back to me, and I wasn't able to comply with everybody and put everybody's story over here, but I just thought that these were some interesting stories here that people shared with us. And so there are a dozen people who are going to tell you their stories here today, so I'm going to step out of the way and let you listen to them, and I know that you're going to enjoy hearing their stories and learning a lot from these late bloomers here on The Magic Word. My guest I have right now comes to us from Redondo Beach, California, and his name is Nick Creature, and so I want to welcome you. Hello, Nick.
Hey, Scott. How's it going, man?
Fine, thank you. And as we've talked about before, and you had sent an email to me after you had heard the podcast, calling for people who have kind of gotten into magic late, and that was your situation. You didn't start when you were an adolescent or a teenager. It was sometime later. So first of all, tell me, how old were you when you first got interested?
I was 43, and it was 1 year ago last week.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So, and you just immersed yourself into it. It sounds like during that 1 year period. But before we get into that, tell me, what was it that actually flipped your switch, I guess, so to speak?
It was a bizarre series of events and coincidences one morning. Honestly, Scott, if you would have told me I would be into magic about a year and 3 weeks ago, I would have looked at you and said, you're out of your mind. I was going to work one day, and I was driving on the freeway between Long Beach and San Pedro in Southern California. And right before you come into the harbor, there's a giant green bridge. If you've seen a lot of movies that take place in L.A., they always feature this big green bridge. It's the Vincent Thomas Bridge. And as I was going over the bridge, I just happened to wander into a suicide attempt. There was a woman who had stopped her car along the bridge and was climbing the fence and was trying to get over the top of it. And I, without thinking of it, I got out of my car and got on the fence with her and was able to talk her down and get her to the police. And
wow.
I mean, it's a crazy thing, Scott. I still get kind of nightmares over it because It was like we were 400 feet over the water on a fence and there was cars blowing by us at 60 miles an hour. Nobody stopped. It was just a weird thing. And I'm not the type of guy that runs into a burning building or anything like that. I'll be the first to tell you. It was just kind of like one of those, just being in the place at the time and just going on instinct and just. But after it happened, I started having nightmares, and the thing that just didn't add up in my head were all the things that put me there that morning, because I was late for work. I drew a random yard that I work at. I'm a dock worker. The way my work goes is you go down to the hall to get hired and you get a ticket with a random yard and a random job. You never do the same thing every day. You never go to the same place. Mm-hmm. So I happened to get a yard that was that close. When I went to the yard that morning, I happened to draw a random break, and that sent me to San Pedro just to go get coffee during my break. And that's when this happened. And I just couldn't, like, it was one of those things where two steps in a different direction that morning, I wouldn't have been in that spot. Like, if I would have left for break at a different time, if somebody else would have showed up at the hall that morning, I would have got a different job. So I couldn't process, like, I was trying to make sense of the series of events. And as I was as that was happening, I was having nightmares for a few weeks. And right around that time, I got invited to the Magic Castle, and I had never been. So my wife and I went to the castle, and right when I walked in, it just, I'm a bit like an old school, like horror and Disney kind of guy. Like, so I absolutely loved just the vibe of the place. You know, I fell in love with it, just walking through the little secret passage to get into the
Victorian atmosphere and everything. Sure.
You know, and then I took a tour with one of the magicians there, and they showed me the Pepper's ghost box from the Haunted Mansion downstairs, and like the prototype. And it just, you could feel the history in the building and all the secrecy, and just, it was just an odd kind of eerie feeling that I was like, I absolutely am in love with this place. So I was like, I wanted to go back, but I didn't, like, I was going to ask the guy if I could come back or if I could, like, you know, but I know it was, it's invite only, and I didn't want to step on any toes. So on the tour, though, he happened to mention, hey, we teach classes here. And I was like, oh, that's kind of kooky. Maybe I should, because I, again, back to the nightmares thing, is like, I had this idea in my head that since this happened to me, I was going to just start doing things differently and start stepping out of my bounds and doing things I wouldn't normally do and try to live my life a different way, because it was just, it just hit me that, like, up on that bridge, that if anything would have gone wrong, I could have orphaned my kids that day. I could have, I just, you know, so I wanted to just do things differently. So when he told me about the classes, I was like, oh, that's kooky. Maybe I can do that. But then he said the magic words. If you take a class here, you get to be a member for 6 weeks and you can come back whenever you want. So that was it. I signed up immediately and I started going to hanging out at the castle and making friends with some of the magicians. And all along I was going to Magic One classes. And then when that ended, I signed up for another one and then another one after that. So I went through about, 18 weeks of me just hanging out at the castle every week, either taking classes or going there and hanging out for dinner and stuff like that. And that was kind of the road to get me into it.
Teaching you all kinds of things as far as close up and stage and mentalism.
Yeah, it was Magic One was a little bit of cards, a little bit of coins, a little bit of ropes, just that kind of stuff. And then I ended up taking a Royal Road class just off the book, and that was because I thought I wanted to do cards. I thought that's sure. That's what I wanted to get into, but the more and more I got into it, I started leaning towards prediction and fate and mentalism stuff just by the nature of what happened to me.
And so then what did that evolve to over that period of time? I mean, after you started having these newfound skills, what did you decide to do with it?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Here's the thing that was odd about it, too, is that as soon as I started taking it, the classes, seeing like the mechanics of it, the magic kind of died for me. And it all became like relegated to a series of moves, you know, at that point. But then something weird happened, man. It was the first time I showed somebody something and their jaw dropped open in astonishment. And it was like, here I am at the docks, like showing a guy in his like mid-40s, a big burly dock worker or something. And this guy smiles like a baby, or his mouth drops open in astonishment, like he cannot believe what just happened. And it's like all that magic comes right back. Every bit of magic you thought you lost, you gain it all back right in that moment. And that's kind of what it's about for me right now, is that like if I can meet somebody and show them something and create a moment that they carry with them for the rest of their lives, that's an incredibly special thing to me.
Now, I understand also that you've created some sort of a showroom in your home then as well.
Yeah, I've kind of gone off the deep end a little bit. Like I said, I started doing this a year ago. Well, I have a studio that I work out of in the back, because I'm also a writer. And it's just a little converted a garage that was converted into like a loft type apartment with a bathroom and a kitchen, but it's just an open air loft. And when I was at the Magic Castle, I was looking at the close up parlor every time I went in there, and that thing only holds 26 people.
Right.
And I would go home and practice things and look at my space and look at, and then I'd go back to the castle and look at the close up parlor. And I was just thinking, man, I could do this in the back of my house. So I put up curtains. I put up a stage. There's a 7x10 stage. And I created a 20 seat parlor in my old studio. We had our first show, a few weeks ago with three magicians, a guy I met, in a magic, forum online, ended up flying out from New York, and we wrote a show and did it together with another magician, who's been on like America's Got Talent and Mexico's Got Talent. Mm-hmm. And, we put on this kind of speakeasy magic show in, a crazy, pop-up parlor in my backyard.
Right. So, are you looking to bring in some other outside talent as well? And if so, how would people get in contact with you to do that?
Yeah, I call my place the Redondo Beyondo Room because I want it to be just this kind of like eerie little weird kind of spot where just weird stuff just kind of happens back here, you know. So, but yeah, you can just if there are any magicians local to the South Bay area or just Southern California area, they can always email me. It's just my name, nickcreature@gmail.com. Just drop me a line. I'd love to be able to get some guys coming through here to do sets, a couple times a month, and just put on a kooky little underground show back here.
Well, that's quite a little. That's a big story, actually, and quite a journey just over the last 12 months. And so I look forward to that being very successful for you in the future and wish you nothing but good luck there, Nick. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. I'm glad you reached out with your story. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was nickcreature@gmail.com. Next up, I've got Angelo Fiorentino, who is going to tell us a story about how that he got involved with magic. First of all, hello there, Angelo. How are you?
Hey, Scott. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you very much for asking. And so when you got involved in magic, about how old were you and how old are you now?
So I liked magic as a kid. I, you know, went to Disney World's magic shop in the early 90s when I was 14. But I never really did much with it, got a few books here and there, but I ended up concentrating on my music. And just recently, I'd say like a year and a half ago, a couple of years ago, my daughter got interested in magic because somebody got her a magic kit for her birthday. I think it was her 8th birthday at this point. She's 10 now. And we started watching Penn and Teller Fool Us. It was on Netflix, and we watched a couple of episodes of that, really enjoyed it, and kind of brought back to me how much I actually enjoyed the art of magic. And she had asked me a few questions if I knew anything. I showed her a stripper deck that I got at Disney World back then, but hadn't touched in years, and showed her a few books, Expert Card Technique and Encyclopedia of Card Magic, that I bought as a teenager. Again, never really worked on them. And now at 42, here I am, buying the 5 volumes of Card College and going through that and reading Juan Tamariz books.
So you were kind of inspired, I guess, by your daughter,
yeah,
interest in magic, and thought, well, I want to kind of join her and kind of play with magic at the same time, and we can both grow and learn together.
Yeah, and what's fun, she comes at it from a different angle. I really am concentrating on card stuff, totally all that, and she loves the illusion side of things. She likes working with little trinkets and working on the actual things that came with her magic kit. It's actually a pretty good magic kit. It's made of wood. It's really nice. And I'm actually taking her to a big show this coming Sunday here. I'm in Montreal, and there's going to be the Champions of Magic coming through here. So I'm bringing her that, and she's going to be really interested in all the illusions and things in that.
That'll be a good show, I'm sure. Yes, you'll enjoy that. Well, now that you've gotten this newfound interest, obviously it's mostly in cards. Are you performing for your family and friends, and what do you plan to do with it? Where's it going to go from here?
That's where I'm planning to go with it, is mostly as a hobby for myself and to maybe entertain some family and friends at gatherings and things like that. I've actually done a few tricks out of Mnemonica for some family members, and if you're looking at that as a layman, you have no idea how somebody could even fathom getting a card like that, right? Nobody has any idea of what a stack deck is or who Juan Tamariz is. I mean, I only discovered Juan Tamariz just a few months ago when I watched the documentary Our Magic, and I had never heard of him, and then really got inspired seeing his work in that, and just couldn't stop looking at other things. And then through him, discovered Danny D'Ortiz and Woody Aragon and Ozzie Wynn and all these amazing magicians that I'd never even heard of. And nobody knows who these people are if you're not really into magic, not in the circles I've been running.
So long term, that as you continue to learn these new skills, it sounds like that particularly if you're learning a memorized deck, it won't be long before you'll be starting to do some walk around shows of your own.
You know, maybe. I don't know. I used to be in a band. I mentioned that to you, but that I used to play music, and that's actually really helped learn these card sleights a little quicker than I would have thought. It didn't take me very long to learn something like the Pinky Count that when I was looking it up on magic forums and stuff, everybody said it's so hard and all that. And my fingers are, I'm lucky enough to have nice strong hands from playing piano for like almost like 35 years. And maybe one day I'll do a walk around show. But when I was in bands, I didn't really like performing in front of people, but I do like entertaining family and friends. Maybe one day at work I'll do a trick or something. But I'm really interested in the theory of it as well. I'm currently reading The Magic Rainbow, again, another book by Juan Tamariz. And it's just so fascinating to me how there's so much psychology involved in this and how the brain works and how easily we're fooled by small things.
There are precious few books out there that are specifically just on theory. But I too find that to be very fascinating, because that's underlying what makes magic, number one, mysterious, and number two, entertaining.
Yeah. I before reading The Magic Rainbow, I read The Structural Conception of Magic by Ascanio. And that was really interesting to me as well. As you can tell, I'm really into the whole Spanish school, which I had no idea existed just, a year ago.
Well, at some point, it sounds like if you continue along that path, you might be traveling over to take a week or two at the Escuela.
Yeah, drag the whole family over to Spain.
There you go. Well, thank you, Angelo. I appreciate hearing your story. That was fascinating.
Thanks. It was a lot of fun talking to you.
And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Angelo Fiorentino.
My guest now has been around a while and has a very interesting story, and something is quite diverse from some of the others that you may hear here on this episode. And so please welcome my good friend, Mr. Bill Wish. Hi there, Bill.
Hey, Scott, how are you? I'm very, very happy to be back.
Good to have you here. Yes, and I say back again that I want to encourage the listeners, if they will please go back to an earlier episode back in, 2012, when you and I had talked for about an hour and sat and chatted about a lot of things and your relationship with Slidini and everything then,
that
too.
That was cool. That was fun.
And speaking of that, we're going to be getting into that here briefly. So the questions, again, that I'd like to ask my guests, first of all, about how that you got started in magic, because I understand that you really didn't get started as a child. You kind of came into it later. So I understand that when you were in the Navy, you saw somebody do like a three-card Monty or something, and that's what kind of flipped your switch a little bit.
I was on Liberty over in Europe. I was on the 6th Fleet. At that time, I was a musician in a Navy band. We went over to the Mediterranean for 5 months in 1968 and December, and we came back in May of 69. And I'll never forget, I had never really done magic, and I remember, there's so many stories, but even on the show, I had seen somebody do a couple of card tricks before that, but tried to get into it, and I just lost interest because I knew I couldn't do it. But then when I saw this guy, I was on Liberty in Malta. Okay, mm-hmm. It was a little island in the Med, and we were on Liberty, and there were a bunch of sailors. We're walking down in Valletta, Malta, the capital city. It's a cobblestone. I can see it in my mind, the cobblestones, and here's all these sailors around there with their white suits. You know, I had mine on. And there's a few other people there and so on. And he's throwing these cards around. And I'll never forget, he said, "Findy Joker, findy Joker, findy Joker," you know. And just like something you'd see in a movie, you know, on TV. And he's giving all this money to these guys, these sailors, you know. And it wasn't dollars, it was pounds. It was 20-pound notes, 10-pound notes, stuff like, you know, good money. And I got to get in on this. So I'm watching this guy, and he's throwing these cards around, and I noticed something. I said, he doesn't realize, true story, he doesn't realize that the corner of that is bent. You know, and every time he turned it over, it was the Joker. Yeah. You know, and he did it, and one of these sailors would get 20 pounds or 10 pounds or whatever it was. And I said, I'm going to get in on this, you know. Stupid me.
Yeah.
He throws me, well, find the Joker. I put my 20-pound note. Nobody else put anything down that time. I was by myself. And he turns it over, and it's a different card. And he takes, grabs the money, and he looks around, and there's like one or two guys that are with him that weren't dressed like sailors. They're gone with him. They said, oh, the cops are coming. Whoop, whoop, and they left, there's a bunch of, maybe a few of us left, and I'm sitting there, they're looking at me, and it turned out we were the real sailors. The other ones had dressed up. I found out that in sailor outfits just to be the misdirection for us,
right.
Idiots.
Chills,
you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that was my introduction. When I said, when I get out of the Navy, I got to find out because there's something going on here. I knew that car was
there.
So
you weren't inspired to become a con man. You were inspired to become a magician. You
I
thought
was
this is
inspiring
magic.
To take money from people. That's what I was trying to do. I wanted to get my own little place and say, find the Joker, you know. But no, it was really fascinating.
So you
to
came
watch
back
to
New York and
came back. And I was in New York City with my wife when I got out of the Navy in 1971. I said, you know, I got to go find out about that guy. I look in the Yellow Pages at this drugstore in Broadway on, right, you know, Times Square. And I remember looking in the Yellow Pages, and it said Magic Supplies. And it says 1540 Broadway. And I looked up, and I knew we were on Broadway. And I said, wow, it was right there. It was almost like, you know, deja vu. Yeah, it had to be.
Right.
Fate.
Right.
And I look at 1540. I said, let's go over there. So we go over there. We went up 17 floors on the elevator. Who knew? Who knew that that would be my first trip up there for hundreds of trips probably over the years.
That was Tannen's?
Tannen's, Lewis mm-hmm. Tannen Incorporated. And I went in, and Lou was behind the counter by himself. There was nobody in there. And he said, what can I do to help? I didn't know anything. I was like literally like I was with the candy when I was little. I was with the candy store again, but this time it was magic. And he said, I'm looking around at all this stuff and pictures of magicians. Well, I saw this guy who was doing a three-card trick, so we talked about that. And he showed me a book that he recommended for that. And I said, I'd love to read about how it's seen. Well, they switched the cards and mm-hmm. so on. And he was really cool because he didn't try and sell me anything. He said, I have a few things you might like to see, you know, and you can do these things, but they're not that hard. I bought every one of them, obviously. Yeah. I walked out of there with a, you know, but it was the best day.
Like with $300 worth of stuff.
Almost 300 bucks in those days, because I had all this money, you know, saved up from I didn't spend much when I was in the Navy. I was in there for almost 4 years, a little less than 4 years. And boy, did that pay off, because that's when I started studying, 1971. Yeah.
And there was a guy, you saw a poster for Claude Ricks?
On the counter when I was there, he said, you got to go and see this guy. And I said, well, what's that? He said, well, that was on July 2nd of 1971. He said, and this was in April, or May, I think it was, or early June. And I said, what is that? He said, that's a lecture. This guy comes across the Atlantic and with his wife, and they do tricks on the ship. He's been doing this for a long time. And then after he gets to New York, he does a lecture, which is what he's going to do this time. And he said he just does the tricks that he wants to show. And then he explains it. He said, you should go to see this guy. And I said, I'm there. You know, I said to my wife, I said, we're going to sign up. And he said, well, I wrote it all down. Hotel Piccadilly, it was in New York City. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, it's right on 45th Street, which is where Slidini's studio was. So everything was right around that area.
But then how did you end up meeting Slidini then?
Well, the interesting thing about it, that was in 71. I joined IBM, got to be accepted in Ring 113 in New Jersey, and eventually joined the SAM as well. And there were some pretty good magicians in those groups in those days. Herb Varrow, Connie Bush, you know, different people that had a reputation, was very, very big. And I said, I'd love to be able to take lessons from them. Sometime in the future, because I wasn't ready yet. I was, you know, still at the point where I was learning quite a bit of the basic stuff. And sure enough, there was a banquet we had, and then we were going to have Slidini, you know. And I fell off the chair. I said, you kidding me? The guy's alive? Slidini, this guy I've been reading about in Stars of Magic and, you know, all these different books and stuff. So sure enough, he's going to be at our banquet. I said, wow, I didn't know he was alive. A couple months later in New York City, they're going to have a testimonial for him at Rockefeller Center. It was a big deal. So I got tickets for that. And my wife and I went and said, oh, that would be a perfect opportunity because I knew Herb was going. I'll ask Herb Zarrow for lessons. And that would be it. Perfect time. I go to Herb and I say, hey, Herb, would you mind if I took lessons with you? Because he lived about 20 minutes away in New Jersey, you know. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, why are you coming to me? Go to him. And I look over and there's he is sitting there. And I walked up and I said, could I take some lessons? He said, sure. He gave me a card and he says, call me up. And that was in December 1973. And that was the beginning. That was it. And I knew nothing. And first thing he said at the lesson was, what do you want to learn? And I said, everything. And he said, you coming to the right place.
Well, I know that he was someone who had taught lessons to a lot of people, and there are many people who say, I am a student of Slidini's.
Well, he had literally hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands right. of students. It was very intense. I went from 73 to 76 every week, pretty much, that he was home, because sometimes he'd go to South America or Europe or someplace for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. you know, and do lectures or shows or what have you. So there were some weeks in there that I didn't go, but pretty much every week I could. And so it must be 100-plus lessons, you know, in a three-year period.
And as a result of that also, that you had said before in your lecture about how that he was paid in books, his own books, I guess, by Tannen's.
By Tannen's,
yep. You were asked by him. He didn't want to travel to do his lectures. So you were the person who he had given this letter to as authorized to do the Slidini lecture nationwide.
Freaked me out. At the lesson, he says, one lesson in January of 76, he says, would you like to lecture? Lecture. He used to say lecture, you know, lecture. And I said, sure, I'd love to. He said, I'm coming out with the new books. Would you go around the country and lecture from these books? And I said, duh, well, I'm there. You know, my wife yeah. and I would go around. So he brings out this old, probably Underwood or whatever it was, one of those old clunky, you know, typewriters. And he says, type what I say. And he took about an hour. He had his piece of letterhead in there. And I typed it. And he gave me a letter telling everybody that he was recommending me. He said, dear president to the mm-hmm. clubs, he said, send it to everybody. I'm going to introduce my books with this guy who's, you know, one of my best students at that time, he said. And it was, I was floored. I knew it was important.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Bill, very much. Appreciate the story and letting us know about your path and what you've taken, you know, later in life and what it's done for you. And I just think it's interesting to the listeners then also to some of the people we are talking to in this episode are still young, so to speak, in magic. And here you are, have matured in magic, although you got started really later in life with this and the successes that you've had.
24 years old, yep.
Yeah. And now you're 27?
I'm 28. I wasted, like Vernon said, I wasted the first 2 years of my yeah. life. I'm 72 now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Looking great and still getting around well with teaching Restless Magic. So thanks very much, Bill, for being our guest and talking a little bit about your life and
thank
your
you.
Journey.
Yeah, thank
and so
you.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Bill Wish.
Next up, we have from Los Angeles, Mr. Charles Cisneros. Hey there, Charles.
Hey, how are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for asking. And I would like to hear the story you have about how you first came across magic. What was it that inspired you?
Well, you know, if we're going to talk about magic, I mean, as a young child, like, you know, a lot of people will say I was inspired by this magician or that. I was actually more interested in the history and folklore of occult magic, which actually led me to pursue the practice of archaeology when I went to college. Now, I never was a practitioner of the occult or anything like that, but I was just very fascinated by some of the old world religions and things that had happened in the past. And then as I was learning about these things, I kind of noticed that, you know, shamanism and some of the early archaeological sites have evidence of magicians doing sleight of hand. And then from there, I thought, you know, this is kind of a cool thing. And I started studying that in college. But as I graduated and went into the professional world, I soon learned that clients don't really care so much about that side of archaeology. They want to know whether or not they're going to have an impact to their project. And then as time passed on, you know, living in Los Angeles, the Magic Castle was nearby and I would always see it. And the owl was something that always attracted me. The sign outside, you know, with the owl Archimedes, I saw that sign and I was attracted. And I wanted to know more about this place. I had met my wife here and when she knew about it, she had some friends that were members and we talked about it. And then I just kind of started exploring the history of sleight of hand magic. And I thought, you know, I want to take classes there. At the time, it was very difficult to take a class because they had a very small waiting list. And then what happened was finally through social media, I saw they were offering a Saturday afternoon class. It was taught by Tom Ogden. It was magic with everyday objects.
Right.
I signed up. I went to the castle. My very first time to go to the castle. It was a great experience.
How old were you at the time?
I was actually 42 at the time. And so when I went to the class, we sat down and he handed out some materials and we were doing some basic magic with rubber bands and paper clips and dollar bills. And I was thinking, okay, this is kind of okay. It's interesting. And then he showed me a very simple self-working card trick, which he called the 21 card trick.
Uh-huh.
And it changed my world.
Wow.
As soon as I saw the outcome of the effect, and I thought, wow, this is something I can actually do. I mean, I just learned how to do this and I can use it to tell stories. And it just opened up a whole new world for me. And from then I was immediately hooked. From that one trick, I was immediately hooked.
And so from there, did you start to explore by reading more books or getting some DVDs, going to a local magic shop or going online, joining a magic club? What did you do from there?
So the first thing I did, yes, books were a thing I started buying. Now my library has grown. I mean, I'm 47 now, going on 48. So the last 5 years, my library is I must have two full shelves now of magic books. Picked up a DVD. But, I realized that I do better in a classroom setting than trying to learn things on my own or learning one-on-one with someone.
Uh-huh.
So, the courses were 6 weeks. I got to know Tom a little bit better over the next 6 weeks, and he kind of gave me some good reference material to review. And at the same time, I was reading a book by an anthropologist, Graham Jones, who is called Trade of the Tricks. I don't know if you read this book, but it's basically an anthropologist goes to Paris, and it's, instead of going to, say, some remote part of the world to see how certain people live, he went to Paris to study how magicians live, and he followed these magicians, and he learned to be a magician. It's a really great book. And so reading that, and then I'm thinking, well, maybe there's some archaeology books like that are written about magic, but I haven't found one to date. There's some great stories, obviously with the Egyptian magician Djedi and the sleight of hand that he did for the pharaoh. I've always found that one very interesting from the I forget where papyrus is from, but so from there, I was reading more books, and then this is when it got really interesting. There was Tom has said, hey, there's a couple of open slots for Mark and Nani Wilson. They were teaching their their magic courses at the castle through the AMA. And so I got on the waiting list, and then there was a spot open, and from there it just went. I went full into it 100%. I started taking classes with them. I took Magic 2, 3, and 4 with Mark and Nani. I got to know their son, Greg. So that was where I really started to become more involved in the world of magic, just through them.
So from there, what do you plan to do this? What do you see in your futures?
Yeah, I do want to perform. Obviously, I'm not going to quit my day job, coming into this late in life, but I really do enjoy it. And my daughter has taken to it as well. So we've been performing. So I joined, the IBM, and I attend local ring meetings. And that gives that allows us the opportunity to actually perform for library shows or elementary school shows. So my daughter and I have developed an act. We quickly learned that the more and more we rehearse, the better and better we get. So it's fun. And, and nothing says I love you more than having your daughter push a sword through your throat. So.
Well, that sounds great. I'm glad that you're enjoying that with a father-daughter kind of a thing, too. Well, Charles, thanks very much. I appreciate you sharing your story.
Well, thank you, Scott. And, thanks for everything you do.
Well, you are quite welcome. And so from Los Angeles, that was Charles Cisneros. So next we have with us, all the way from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Mr. Clint Smith. Hey there, Clint. How are you, sir?
Hi, Scott. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you. And you are doing magic now, but you had gotten into it rather late in life. So tell us your story. What was it that inspired you?
Well, early on, probably around 8 years old or so, I would gather, roughly. Of course, cliche, I saw the Copperfield performances on TV. Later in life, maybe around 30 or so, shows like AGT, Fool Us, Wizard Wars, Carbonara Effect, those things of those nature, I found myself watching, and gradually it growing into something that I wanted to go explore a little more.
And then once you got an interest, did you kind of fall into it full force?
Yeah, definitely. My wife would definitely agree with the full force part. So
okay.
I really what first inspired me in later in life, that is, was when I had a kid, when I first found out my wife was pregnant, maybe it was actually a coping mechanism to some degree, because she said I would not put down a deck of cards at that point. So maybe that was my turning point. But during that time, I actually decided I was out delivering some printed materials for a client, and I decided I was just going to stop in at the local shop in Tulsa and burn an hour with Steve Lancaster, who later, you know, helped really usher me into believing this is something I should pursue with my time and things of that nature. But the kid thing, you know, to me, maybe subconsciously, it felt like another way for me to connect with them, another medium that I could, you know, connect with a child or other children that I'm fixing to be more around.
Sure.
Using visual means, I thought might be a good way.
And so then, was it cards that you continued with, or did you start doing some birthday parties or anything, or just close up?
Definitely close up is what I've been drawn to, and cards was definitely the catalyst for everything. I do very much enjoy a lot of sleight of hand things, just with cups and balls is just the epitome of learning everything from misdirection to scripting and talking and sponge balls and some coins effects, basic stuff, scotch and soda.
Right.
But I do like to stay within the realm of close up for the most part.
So what have you decided to do with that, or where do you believe it's going to be taking you at this point in your life?
At this point in my life, it is tearing me every direction. I have never been so, engulfed and passionate about a topic like this in a long time, or ever, rather. It's pulling me all kinds of directions. I am being pulled on, I really enjoy making things, whether it's tricks and effects or objects that do certain things, trying to develop my own character, my own performances, writing those scripts, manipulating, current effects to work with that character I'm trying to develop. I started an electronic company in Magic. I have electronic background, so I definitely am trying to push into that area. But the Magic House has many rooms, and I know there's a spot for me, and maybe perhaps several spots. I just gotta find where those chairs are and sit down.
Well, good luck with that. It sounds like that you found a passion there, and also you're still trying to sort things out exactly where you're going to end up. So I know that it's going to be great.
It's hard for me to focus on one thing right now, even though I've only been really involved for 5 years about, but it's starting to hone down on each of the four or five things I want to do. But like I said, it may be many rooms I reside in. All I know is I want to be in the house.
That's great. That's great. And you're how old now?
I am 37 now.
Yeah, 37. Well, great. Clint, thanks very much. I appreciate you sharing your story.
Thank you so much, Scott.
You're welcome. And so from Tulsa, Oklahoma, that was Clint Smith. Next, I have with me a friend who is from the Los Angeles area, so please welcome Daniel Will. Hey there, Daniel.
Hi, Scott.
So tell me about your story and how it was that you were first inspired to learn magic.
Well, it's kind of a circuitous path. I'm not one of these guys who had a magic kit as a child, but when my own child was young, the desire to learn some magic occurred, and we had a little magic shop in Pasadena at the time, oddly enough, run by Cosmo Solano.
Oh, wow. Okay. Huh?
So the child got interested in magic. So it was a sideline. Obviously the parent gets involved, and I started learning some things. My most vivid memory is I took the young scouts to see a magic show at Citrus College called Stars of Magic, hosted by none other than Dale Selwak.
Sure, I know that Dale, yeah, has that tour he does, huh?
Very classic stuff. His Fountain of Silks and Miser's Dream Bucket just made me go, wow.
Yeah.
And so I kind of got a bit of a bug, and I mostly did little things for friends and family, but I got involved in teaching scout leaders things that they could do, magic that they could do with their kids. because I had our kids do a magic show at obviously a scout meeting. And then that was always kind of there in the background, and children go on and leave scouting and stuff. And
about how old were you at the time?
Oh, I was in my, that would have started in my early 30s.
All right.
And then when I met my current wife, and she knew I was doing this with the scouts, in about 01 or 02, she took me to this place called the Magic Castle that I wasn't familiar with. But I just remember this great night. She picks me up in a limo. We're all dressed to the nines, and we see magic. And then, again, more of the same with the scouting. But then in about 2013, 2014, I started getting more interested for something to do. And it was kind of the performance bug more, I think, than anything, because my background in high school was theater. I came to L.A. to be an actor, blah, 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 blah. But I discovered this podcast called The Magic Word. And I started listening to it. And the gentleman who does the podcast, who shall remain nameless, invited my wife and I to the castle in April of 2015. It all went downhill from there because said host encouraged me to investigate the castle and take lessons. And I said, my wife goes, you should do that. And so I did. And I was blessed to be able to take about 24 weeks of lessons with Mark Wilson and Nani Darnell.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was real cool. Because I did know who they were. I used a lot of Mark stuff in what I was teaching the scout leaders from his book. And since that time, I've just kind of jumped in feet first. I've gone to conventions, met a lot of wonderful people. And that's the best thing about this craft to me, is the people that you meet. They are some of the nicest people in the world. They will share with you. They will encourage you, much like you. And so in late 2016, I auditioned to be a magic member of the Magic Castle and was accepted. And as they say, when you arrive at the front door there, welcome home.
Yeah, I love it when they do that.
You know, I'm a hobbyist, enthusiast. I've done a few shows when asked, but mostly it's family and friends. But I was at the castle last night, as a matter of fact, and somebody that I knew, a friend, maybe a higher grade hobbyist, was actually doing a set down in the cellar as for the people that walked by. And I sat and watched her set, and I said, you know, this is something that I need to do. So it's one of my goals for 2020 is to build a simple routine set and try it out there in the basement of the castle.
Pretty cool. So that's your long-term goal and what you really wanted, or I say short-term goal, I guess, yeah. Coming up here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 59, and when I auditioned, you know, one of the things in my interview, I said, look, I have no aspirations of being a performer, quote unquote, at the Magic Castle. I mean, I'm not a full-fledged professional performing magician. And one of the guys, one of the judges, whatever you want to call them, interviewees, came out to me afterwards and said, never say never. I was 65 when I first performed at the castle. So, you know, I'm not ruling it out at this point in my life, but we'll see. We'll see.
Well, that sounds great. That's an interesting story.
My one of my bucket list items is to be able to study under Dale Selwyn. He doesn't live far from where I am, and I have the information.
Yeah, because I know, yeah, he does teach the Chavez course, and so he's the right guy, and you're in the right place, so good luck with that. Well, Daniel, thanks very much. I appreciate you sharing your story.
No worries.
And so from Los Angeles, that was Daniel Will. So now from Los Angeles, I have with me Mr. Ian Scheller. Hi there, Ian.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thanks very much. So I understand that you have an interesting story then about how that you got started in magic a little bit later in life. What was it that first inspired you, and how old were you when that happened?
Scott, it's such an interesting question because magic has always been in my life. I just never gave it the focus and attention it deserved all through my whole life. So I was not committed to doing things a professional would do or an amazing amateur would do. So it just didn't crystallize.
At what point did it finally do that for you?
When I saw my son, who was about 1 year old, playing with playing cards on our floor in our living room, he looked up at me and I'm like, whoa. he's surrounded by the cards. And I'm like, whoa, maybe he's going to show me a trick. I didn't know what was happening. It was so playful.
Right.
You know, when you see a newborn just get into anything, they are doing it for the first time. There is no, there are no blocks in their body or mind. Everything is constant fluidity, which right. is where I think theatrically, you know, I'd like to be someday when it comes to magic, to not have any of those. And you see, when I saw Juan Tamariz for the first time, it's like, wow, look at that guy, you know, but it crystallized because of my son. And all of a sudden I started going back and I had Erdnase. It was on my shelf. It was there. It's been there. I've had the books magicians are telling me to just look at and study. I've had them, and I don't even remember buying them because I was too caught up in other things to.
Right. So then you started going back to these books, I guess, and digging into them and finding some secrets.
Yeah, 100%. I saw soon after my son had that kind of connection with me, and I connected with him. My aunt returned my grandfather's magician suitcase to me. I was doing a show in Jersey in one of the backyards, and after I finished with Invisible Deck, which killed,
of course.
After the show, she goes, you know, your grandfather's suitcase is still in our basement. So there's original tricks from Slidini in there, and I have my grandfather's book collection where I have Clifford Green's book, which is a beautiful card book signed to my grandfather. Scott, it's all there. Do you know what I mean? And I never took the time for whatever reason. I never took the time to just get into it as an art. But that's all, you know, that's all I do with myself anyway.
Yeah. So after you started getting into that, did you decide to join a local magic club, or did you start getting involved with other magicians, or start doing this just on your own?
I signed up for the IBM because my grandfather was a past member. So it was very easy for me to just check that box on the website and be included and accepted immediately, which is kind of cool. And yeah, I did. I joined. I will be probably going to ring meetings later. I love spending nights home with my son and putting him to bed and reading to him. And
how old is he now?
He's 4. He just turned 4. But, you know, to answer your question, it's I've been able to study with Roberto Giobbe already. I've been able to study and meet some amazing people because of my location. And there's every magician I meet is just an amazing person.
That's great. Well, what do you you say you've done a few shows since then? So do you continue to plan to continue doing more of those kinds of stand up and close up shows?
100%. I mean, to me, I take knowledge I get from the books very slowly, going as slow as I can. And if I get one new sleight, I'll do it for a whole year. So I'm just doing palm. Yeah. I'm doing palming now. And there's a few tricks from Royal Road, which is such an amazing book. I'll bite a bit wordy and you could feel where it's dated, but there is so much amazing technique and foundation in that book. And that's what I'll do, Scott. I'll sit down and say, you know what? I'm going to incorporate, for instance, deck switching in my last show. That's all. The whole thing was deck switching.
Mm-hmm.
How many decks can I get in the show? How can I disguise them? How can I switch them? And that was it. And it was great because I'm focusing on one thing. Putting that into the show is the theme and going from there. And I wind up doing – usually I do 3 to 6 shows.
Now, where do you do the shows? You know, where do you do the shows and who do you do them for?
I go back east and I just tell everybody, hey, I'm going to do – I got a half an hour. I got like 35 minutes of magic.
Which is some of your friends you grew up with in Jersey.
Friends, family, get-togethers. When I traveled, I was – you know, I'm from the tri-state area, so we hit New York and Philly, Jersey, and I'll – just take the cards with me or I'll take the show with me.
Cool.
And it's a wake up call because there's so much theatrics and craziness. And sometimes I'm reminded of when I was a costume character making money in between college and doing shows like that. Sometimes I remember stuff from community theater that I grew up doing. So again, I'm going to keep doing it, Scott. That's the only thing I could do.
Well, that sounds great. Ian, thanks very much. I appreciate you sharing your story with us.
Thanks so much, Scott.
You're welcome. And so from Los Angeles, by way of New Jersey, that was Ian Scheller. So now we have a guest all the way from Chicago, Illinois, who has an interesting story. Please welcome Ridgely Hunt. Hi, Ridgely.
Hey, Scott. How are you doing?
Fantastic, sir. So tell me, when you got involved in magic, or I should say, when you saw a magician that kind of inspired you, how old were you?
Oh, the way that this all started for me was a little bit less direct than that. I was talking to a couple of friends of mine who had an interest in magic. I was visiting with them in Arizona, and they had been talking about the Magic Castle. And I thought to myself, that sounds interesting, something to look into again sometime, you know, when I've got a minute or two. So I'm in the financial services business, and I was in a training that was just god-awful dull. And I'm a certified financial planner, which means that I actually knew enough about what was being taught that I could have taught what I was sitting through better than the people who were teaching it. But everybody had been given a laptop to follow along with. And so I said, oh, yes, 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 the Magic Castle. I meant to take a look and see what that was like. So I Googled the Magic Castle and brought up the website and took one look at that. And I went, oh, yes, 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 I remember this. This is cool. I want to know more about this. And that was it. That was that was when the bug bit and it actually took hold. And from that point on, my wife has been very worried about me because she says it's all I talk about now. So that was the moment that that it happened.
And how old were you when you looked at the magic?
I was about 54 at that point.
Okay.
When that one happened. Yep.
And so then did you go out and, I assume, visit the castle ultimately? And then it kind of got...
I ultimately did, yeah. So I started looking around the internet for information about magic. And I also took a little expedition into the city. I actually don't live in Chicago now. I live in a suburb of Chicago called Wakanda, which is a good hour and maybe a little bit more from the Magic Lounge and from Magic Inc. But I made a trip into the city to visit Magic Inc. And I bought a copy also of Joshua Jay's book, The Complete Course in Magic. And that's where I'd started to actually learn to do things. And,
great book.
Yeah. I'd done a couple of things for people, you know, the way that people do when we're rank amateurs doing things for family at family gatherings. And the material that you can get from that book, that's good enough that it's not just pulling coins from kids' ears at the Thanksgiving dinner. So I went down to Magic Inc. and I met Pedro and I met Louis Carrion, and they made me feel very welcome. And that was sort of the intro to actually shopping and buying and studying and learning. But I've got a wide network of suppliers now that keep me well supplied with magic.
It's great that you had an actual brick-and-mortar shop to go to there in Chicago. You know, that's why I think of the advantages of attending conventions or magic club meetings where you have other magicians you can talk to and share ideas and catch their spark to ignite your own flame.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And they were great. And everybody in the community has been great. I've been so you had mentioned wanting to know what other things I've done. I've become a member of the local SAM chapter, SAM number 3. And also I was at the groundbreaking for the Chicago Magic Lounge, and I've been around that place ever since. And I'm also a member then of the Chicago Magic Roundtable. And so that's sort of my community participation when I join the caravan and trek all the way into Chicago.
So what do you want to do with this as you go forward? Do you, as far as like showing this to your clients, to other people that you're working with, or just keeping it as a private hobby?
Magic, I don't think, really actually exists until you do it for other people. When you do magic alone in a room, even on a practice table, even when you can do a routine well from beginning to end, if there's nobody there to see it, it's not magic, it's practice. So I enjoy showing other people things when I'm at work and, you know, and occasionally doing things for people in the family setting. I've been known to pull out a deck of cards and do stuff for wait staff in restaurants. Again, to the chagrin of my wife, who's very worried about me. But ultimately it's a performing art, and I do think I'm going to have to perform. I don't think I'm at all interested in making performance a revenue stream or anything like that. I'm happy with what I do, but I think people have pointed out that if you perform as a complete amateur for family and friends, then what you end up doing is a lot of different tricks and maybe not all that well. Whereas if you're a professional performer, you are performing for lots of different audiences and people and not as many tricks, but you get to hone them. And so my goal is to end up with a really solid repertoire of 15 or 20 tricks that I actually perform for audiences that are not just the same people over and over again, because they would get bored.
Right. No, you got that exactly right. That's true. And as far as doing tricks for yourself, when you just call it practice, I've always said a magician who is not working is only fooling himself.
Right, exactly. I've found it to be extremely fulfilling. When I was a kid, I wanted to be an actor. And in that subtle and amazing way that parents have of doing things like this, I was completely persuaded that that would never work. And I regret that. But one of the things that I find the most enjoyable about magic is that it is a performing art. It is theater in a sense. And so being able to do that actually gives me a way of actually bringing a performance. And you know, my interest in magic goes deeper than just the tricks themselves, but what magic actually means to the people who see it. I'm looking forward to being able to explore all of that a lot deeper.
That sounds great. Well, Ridgely, thanks very much for your time. Welcome to the world of magic.
Thank you. Thanks, Scott. Thanks very much. And thank you for giving me so much as a part of it. I listen to your podcasts quite a lot, and they've been an important part of kind of being formative as far as finding my feet in the magic world.
All great. Well, thank you very much. That's flattering, and I appreciate that. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Ridgely Hunt in Chicago, Illinois. So my guest right now is Ryan Johnson, and Ryan has a very interesting story to tell us that he had sent me an email and gave me a little detail in the background, and I want him to share his story with you. So first of all, let me say hello, Ryan.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
Fantastic. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing very well.
Great. First of all, tell me, how old were you when you first got involved and interested in magic?
So I really got interested in magic, or, you know, learning how to perform magic when I was 31 years old, uh-huh. 33 now. So it actually happened. We're coming up on the 2-year anniversary. So I was 31 and 33 now.
And what was it exactly that kind of flipped your switch that caused you to catch the bug?
Yeah, so it happened. I remember the weekend pretty well. It was actually Thanksgiving Day weekend. It was a 4-day weekend. And my wife and I have cut cable out for a few years now. You know, we do streaming, Netflix, a lot of stuff like that. And I was on YouTube.
Sure.
I'm doing that instead of watching cable. And I just happened to come across a Fool Us episode. And I don't recall exactly who the magician was, the first one that I saw. Mm-hmm. But over the course of that Thanksgiving weekend in 2017, at that time, there were 3 seasons of Fool Us out. I watched every Fool Us clip that was on YouTube over a 4-day time period.
Wow.
It's just incredible. I saw the one, and then, you know, of course, it comes up the next suggested video, watch the next one, and then, you know, probably 4 or 5 into it, I thought, man, this stuff is awesome. And then I had to watch them all.
Went down that rabbit hole. And your wife is thinking, what's he getting into? Was she watching them with you also?
She was not. It was, that was my nightly rituals. I'd kind of sit in the chair at the end of the night, kind of decompress, watch some stuff on my phone. Uh-huh. So I think every night before bed, I probably watched, you know, a few hours of clips there. And I did save some time because it was YouTube, so I didn't have all the commercials, but yeah, I watched them all.
And after that, then you thought, what? It needs to be something else, or how do they do the tricks? And then you started looking that up on YouTube or buying books or DVDs, or what did you start to do from there?
So that was exactly it. So some of the stuff that I liked the most, I loved the close-up stuff. I mean, some of the ones that do stand out were Paul Gertner's Cups and Balls, Richard Turner doing the cards. And I just – the stuff that impressed me the most was the close-up. And it was so incredible that they could do this stuff so close to people. So then I had to know how it was done. So that led me to YouTube, watched a few tutorials. I think one of the first magicians I came across on YouTube was Chris Ramsey. So started watching some of his videos. And I really liked the card stuff. I was drawn to that the most and just started kind of looking from there. And then after that, I stumbled upon a bunch of resources. I got connected on Reddit. They have a community over there, r/magic, as well as SME Talk, mm-hmm. Facebook groups, and kind of started picking up from there.
Wow. And did you ever think about joining a group like the IBM or an SAM, or is there a local group of magicians near you that you start associating with?
Yeah. So the timeline kind of goes like, so in November I started watching. And probably a few weeks after that, I got my first deck of cards to kind of start practicing. I remember the first trick that I learned was after I saw the YouTube clips, and I went back and rewatched David Blaine and stuff that I remember seeing as a kid, but just went back to rewatch it. And the first trick that I learned was his two-card Monty. So, you know, a few weeks after watching the YouTube videos, got a deck of cards, started practicing some stuff. But then around March time frame, you know, after being into it for about 5 months, is when I wanted to go out and see some magic. And I thought, you know, I live in Jacksonville. I got to be able to go see a magician somewhere. So I got online, realized that there were no local places to go see magic because I knew about the Magic Castle. I had heard about the Chicago Magic Lounge. But that's led me to the IBM. So I joined the IBM and went to my first lecture in May of 2018.
Who was it you saw? Do you remember?
So it was Eric Casey and Sebastian, don't hold me to his last name, Mitovich, Sebastian Mitovich and okay. Eric Casey.
And learned a lot, I guess, from the lecture?
Yeah, so I got I got a few things from the lecture that night. Sebastian, he did just some amazing, amazing card stuff. He did some stack work, and I haven't gotten into that stuff yet, but he just did some absolutely incredible stuff. I mean, every lecture I go to, I'm seeing stuff that, again, being new to magic, it's all new to me. So I saw Bill Wish about a month ago do Slidini Silks, which I had never seen before. So to me, you know, I was like a little kid seeing it. It was incredible.
It's all new to you. Okay. So what is the long term? What do you expect to do to this? I mean, as a hobby, a part-time profession, the world's your oyster right now. What are you looking at wanting to do with it?
Yeah, so, a part-time profession for sure, you know, start – kind of, it's my side hustle right now. I want to call it that. So, probably about, September of 2018 I was practicing every night for a few hours. So I just substituted where I was watching YouTube and Netflix and stuff. I just substituted that for practicing.
Sure.
And about September of last year, I decided I wanted to do more. I wanted to actually start performing. So I got together with, Chris Sharp, one of the other, ring members out of Ring 130. And we started talking about putting on an open mic night because I listened to Discourse and Magic, and they had done something similar up in Toronto with the Toronto Magic Company. So we put that together, and over the last year, we put on, I think, 5 Magic open mics, one a month. Then we moved into Dave & Buster's, and we put on a monthly show at Dave & Buster's, mm-hmm. Some free shows, and we're actually entering our 5th month of doing paid shows. It's called Smoke and Mirrors Jacks is kind of what we're calling the performance troupe. And that was, you know, at the time I didn't know that there was a Smoke and Mirrors up in Pennsylvania. But we just called it that because we started a cigar bar. So we thought it was a catchy name.
Oh,
Smoke
sure.
and Mirrors. But yeah, so we're putting on our 5th show. November is actually going to be our year anniversary, and, it's going to be headlined by Nathan Coe Marsh. So I think that's pretty cool. You know, just the fact that I got started with Fool Us. And a year after getting into magic, I was on the stage for the first time, performing at the open mic, and have been performing since then, and going and doing close-up stuff and working on some stage stuff. But then, you know, here this Friday, I'm going to be taking stage with one of the gentlemen that I saw on Foolless. So.
Wow, that's pretty cool, kind of coming a full circle from just a couple of years ago. I think that that's very inspirational, Brian, what you've shared with us then, because there are people who have been in magic a lot longer than you who haven't gone that far. But, I mean, you wanted to do it so badly that you've actually created that opportunity for yourself. And so good for you. That's fantastic. And is that, by the way, a website where people can go to get some information that they can come? I guess, obviously, it's open to the public.
Yeah, it's Smoke and Mirrors Jacks, all spelled out, smokeandmirrorsjacks.com.
Great, and then get more information on that. Good luck.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So that's one person's story. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Ryan. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Ryan Johnson. Next, I have with me Mr. Sean Doolin, who is from upstate New York, up in the Catskills. Hey there, Sean. How are you?
I'm well, Scott. What an honor to be here. Thank you. Well,
thank you. I'm glad. Thank you for joining us and talking about your experience. So how did you first actually get inspired or introduced into magic?
Well, at age 47, magic got into me, and I like to say it that way because prior to that, I didn't have an interest in magic other than to do one or two card tricks basically my entire life up until that point. The short story is I was recovering from an illness. Mm-hmm. And my wife, I just returned from Italy, and my wife had bought a book for me years prior called Easy Card Magic. She bought this book for me several years, maybe around, I was around 44 for Christmas, and I never opened it. But I was, I had pneumonia, and I was recovering. The doctor told me I could recover at home or in the hospital. I chose to sit on the couch, and I'm not one to sit on the couch, so I needed something to do. So I picked up this book, and I started doing card tricks. And as I like to say to my wife, it's the most expensive book she ever bought because that, I went for practicing.
That was the thing that introduced you to magic and to an expensive hobby that could get to be expensive, certainly, for sure.
For sure. It did in many ways because I moved away from law and into magic full time. So, yeah, so that's how it started. So I tell my wife she created this monster. So.
And so you've been doing that for about how long now?
7 years. I'm 54 now. 7 years. Very dedicated.
Well, during that time, have you been studying more books and learning more magic, I assume?
Yes. I went out to Las Vegas for a month with my wife, and we went to Jeff McBride's Magic and Mystery School there.
Oh, that's always a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Street performed for a month. And then we traveled throughout Europe, starting in London and Scotland and Italy, France, and all over, Germany twice. And my wife became a balloon twister at the same time that I became a magician. So
were you doing street magic over in Europe?
Yeah, I was. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, that was why you went over there. You went over there for the exclusive purpose, really, just to kind of travel around and do street magic?
Well, both. To see street performers. To travel and to perform.
And so once you come back to the States, you're no longer practicing law then, I guess, or?
I was still. It was a gradual process to transition. I started performing on the street in upstate New York, in Saratoga, New York, and there was this young man across the street who was getting these huge crowds. Mm-hmm. And I went over and talked to him, and then he came over and watched my show with very small crowds. And very small hats, and he gave me some advice, and that magician is Steve Brundage.
Oh, doggone. What a nice guy, too.
Yeah, he is, and that started a long friendship with Steve. In fact, I've opened for him 6 or 7 times, and we're doing a show together in Wyndham later this month in December. So that Steve was performing street magic at that time and doing it quite well, but this was before he had made it big.
Yeah, got his notoriety and fame and everything. And so you're still now doing street magic, or are you doing other things?
No, I don't do any street magic unless Cosmo calls me and we go out.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, I do mostly stage shows, a fair amount of strolling magic. I have a local restaurant. I live in a ski town. It's a ski resort, and they own a restaurant, so they have me there every Saturday night. during the ski season, and even in the off season, I perform in some of the local restaurants. And I also do a family show in a lot of the resorts. There are still a number of Catskill resorts that get the New York City crowd. In fact, they're making a comeback. So several of those resorts hire me in the summer. So I'm very busy.
Yeah, that sounds really great. Well, that's an interesting story, kind of starting with a sickness and then reading a book that inspired you to a whole new career that you're doing successfully now. Well, congratulations. That sounds great. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. It's been fun.
And so for the Magic Word Podcast, what a great story. That was Sean Doolin. All right, now we have a guest all the way from Cape Cod, actually out just south of Boston, Massachusetts, Mr. Sean Mullins. Hi there, Sean.
Hey, how's it going, Scott?
Fantastic. So glad to have you here to tell me about your story. Not just tell me, but tell the rest of the listeners here about how that you got started in magic a little bit later in life.
When I was about 19 or 20, somebody showed me the two-card transposition when we were sitting in history class. I begged him to teach me that trick, and ever since then, he did. And I've just been obsessed. I've just been learning so much about it. I took maybe a couple years off in between, but then I got really serious about it about 4 years later.
When you say you got serious about it, were you continuing on just with cards? I mean, that was obviously a trick card thing, but was it pack of tricks or card tricks and sleight of hand, or did you buy some books or what then?
I got really into sleight of hand with cards, which later got into a little general practitioner kind of stuff. I got into doing a little bit of stage magic. I got into doing parlor and close up, and I've just really enjoyed it all, which has been really fun.
And what have you done with that since, as far as taking that passion and turning it into something that may be profitable?
Well, I've been able to meet really cool magicians who've helped me out and teach me a lot along the way. I've also been able to work with some good magic companies along the way as well. I got to work with Illusionist.com when they were kind of building up their social media platform. And as of now, I've been able to work with Conjurer.community, which is Aaron Fisher's website, which it also helps develop new magicians and kind of learn sleight of hand and kind of guide them through magic a little bit. And it's been really great.
Wow. And you're how old now then?
I am 34.
Okay. So ever since you were 19, I mean, you really kind of developed that passion and continued to work with that, which you're still working then with Aaron then right now. And you're doing some other types of shows. What are you doing now?
Now I'm kind of focusing more towards small audience entertainment. So that's kind of what I'm kind of branding as like parlor show kind of material. So the smaller audience, and I'm kind of developing that show right now. I have a good close-up show that I like to perform, and that's really what it is. I just really love performing and sharing magic with people who are of the regular public.
Right. Did you, you say you took off some time, but did you go back and finish college?
Yes, I did. So I did finish college. I am a physical therapist assistant during the day.
And then, so really, would you consider yourself a full-time professional or part-time professional?
Part-time pro, because I definitely perform a professional caliber show, exactly. And I do professional caliber magic, but I do it on the side.
Yeah, yeah. I always like that term that Gene Anderson had coined, a part-time pro, because when you are performing, that you're doing the same thing that a full-time professional would do in a very expert manner. Yeah.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
Great. Well, Sean, thanks very much. Good story. Appreciate you sharing that with us.
Thanks, Scott. Pleasure to meet you, man.
And so from outside Boston, that was Sean Mullins. Now I have with me Mr. Tom Yates from Iowa. Hi there, Tom. How are you?
Pretty good, Scott.
I'd like to hear your story about how that you had gotten into magic and what was it that actually inspired you?
Sure. At the age of 60, 6 years ago, I was practicing a lot of music on a couple of different instruments. And what I noticed was that my hands began to hurt. And I thought, well, I know what to do. I've been through this before. I have handouts, and certainly there are videos around of how to do exercises, but I was thinking, you know, I've done those before when I was on the threshold of overuse injuries. What would be different? And it just the little light bulb popped on and said, well, what if you started doing coin or card slights? So with that any background information whatsoever. I got online and went to a magic site. I can't even tell you which one it was now, Scott. I bought a coin DVD. I think it was a an older piece by Todd Buchanan on basic coin stuff. And got the DVD and found a half dollar and started going through the DVD. I started doing that. And I said, well shoot, this is a whole lot of fun. And from there, it blossomed into the larger interest. I'm not sure I can speak to how much of a positive therapeutic value it had in my my hands. As you can certainly, you can wear yourself out certainly doing the same hand moves over and over.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting that you actually had an inspiration on your own as opposed to seeing Penn and Teller on television or seeing another magician perform live or or something. It was just kind of an epiphany that you had.
Yeah, and it really was just that. I cannot speak in retrospect to any particular moment that occurred either live or from television or anything else or an article I read somewhere. It just dawned on me that I needed to do some other kind of hand movement, and that the idea of learning sleights just popped into my head. So the development after that, I think, is fairly typical. But I did what a lot of people, I suspect, do, which is just sort of fumble along for a while and find your way. And in a year or so, I joined the IBM and went to started attending our local ring meetings, which is in a nearby city. You know, just led my curiosity to lead me. And there's a pro and con to this I will get to in a little bit. And it truly has been a general interest in curiosity and magic led to my second beginning, which was just about a year ago. We have one brick and mortar magic shop in Iowa, and it's fairly new. It's the Iowa Magic Shop in Marion, Iowa, which is right next to Cedar Rapids. And it's owned and operated by Tim Stolba. Tim called me one day about a year ago and said, "Tom, I know you're retired from various things and you've got your music thing, but would you be interested in working at the magic shop one day a week?" And I said, "Sure, yeah. I think that would be a lot of fun." So the first day on the job in the magic shop will certainly live in my memory, because this was being a beginner all over again in the most basic and yet dynamic way possible, Scott, because of a couple of things. Number one, when I started doing magic 6 years ago, I did not look around to find out what were beginners, true beginners effects. You know, I just launched myself into coin slates. So I get up to the shop and I realize there are a couple of things. One, cash registers, as we know them, don't exist anymore. And the second thing that was really interesting was that in the window of the shop, behind the counter, we have demo models of all the small beginner tricks back there so that we can demo them. And Tim waved his hand across the back of the counter there at the window, and he goes, "Do you recognize any of these things?" And I said, "No."
But you're going to have to learn them.
It was pretty embarrassing. Yeah, yeah. I said, "No, Tim, I've never had any of those things." And he said, "Well, these are our beginner demo items, and you're going to have to learn them." So there was the point of sale system, the beginner item. And Tim said, "I know you're not a card guy, but we sell cards here. You're going to have to learn some card tricks." And I said, "Okay." And in typical of my way of doing things, I threw myself at it. So a year ago, Scott, I could do one card trick. Now I can do 10.
So is that kind of your long-term plan? Are you going to be continuing to work at the shop for a while? I mean, do you see any other end game that you want to go out and start doing a few shows here and there, or maybe work at a restaurant and do some strolling or cocktail?
I, I, I greatly admire those of you who can do restaurant work. You and Dan Fleshman, who talked about doing restaurant work. I'm a great admirer. I'm not a shy person, and I'm a great admirer. But I really don't think I could do restaurant work. I might be wrong, but I don't think so. I think there's some pros and cons to being older and getting into magic. The pros are life experience, which should help in helping you develop a good sense of yourself. By the time you're 60, I'm hopeful that most of us have a good sense of who we are, which includes some amount of self-patience. If you're like me and you're retired from another profession, you have time. You've got the time to devote. You need some discretionary income, and we all know this. When you come through magic, you buy stuff, and maybe you don't use all of it, but you buy it in order to find out how it works.
Sure.
So yeah. you pay for the curiosity. So if you have some self-knowledge, some patience, and some discretionary income, Those are positive things. I think the negative side, though, leads back to your question. That is, what do you want to do? And it makes a difference when you're 60, say, as opposed to when you're 20 or 30 or perhaps even 40, because you get to a certain age and you realize you don't know how much time you have left.
Right.
And you can be a serious hobbyist and enjoy that if you have no other ambitions. But if you do, then you have to get to the business of promotion, which is truly a business. And I was thinking about your suggestion in your at the table lecture about going to do those kinds of things for like the various service clubs who do look for free speakers, mm-hmm. For example. And I think that's a good idea. I would never want to do anything as a developing magician which would take the money off the table for somebody who's a working professional.
Fair enough. I understand what you're saying. Right.
Right. So I think it's the con side is deciding, at this age, what it is you do want to do, and then putting the energy in, if you have it, to go promote those things. And for me personally, I don't know. I do enjoy working at the magic shop. I like doing the demonstrations. And, of course, the best part is being able to talk to people who truly might be able to get into it. To learn as a skill, as an art, and I really enjoy talking to kids who come into the shop who are eager to learn.
Because some of the young people, again, might be able to turn that into not only a hobby, but then into a profession as well. So thanks again. I appreciate your story.
Thank you, Scott.
And again, coming to us from Iowa, that was Tom Yates. Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. It was quite a delightful dozen stories that we heard from different people across the country, and including Canada then as well. And I want to thank each of my guests for getting in touch with me and for sharing their stories. It's been a lot of fun. I thought this is a good way to kick off the new year with some inspirational stories just to kind of prove that it's never too late for anybody to get involved in magic. And as Eugene Burgert always said, it's a big house with a lot of rooms, and there's plenty of room for everybody. So come on in. During this past year of 2019, we have seen the passing of several great magicians whose memory will live on with many of us, starting with Denny Haney early in the year, and the last one that I'd heard of was Mike Maxwell here recently, and scattered throughout the year, so many different people with Gary Darwin and Marshall Brodine, and of course Johnny Thompson, Anthony Owen, so many others who have passed on and gone on. And so I would like for each of us to stop and think about some of the ways that we have learned from these great gentlemen in the past, and to thank them in your own way for what they have contributed to our wonderful performing art. To go and see a list of all the people that have passed, at least those who I have known or have for whatever reason decided to put on this list, if you'll go to this week's blog at themagicwordpodcast.com, There you'll see a long list of names, plus some links that you can go back and listen to their voices one more time when they have shared some of their thoughts on the podcast. Some have been individual episodes, and others they have just contributed whenever I've spoken with them at some magic conventions or wherever I've seen them kind of, quote, on the fly, I guess, so to speak. So we want to, again, stop and remember those giants upon whose shoulders we stand then now. So, aloha, my friends. Well, this has been a rather longer episode than what I had typically posted in the past and what I plan to continue to post in the future. There are a lot of things going on this coming year with a lot of conventions coming up. The first of which I will be attending soon will be the SAM, the Society of American Magicians Convention in Las Vegas. So look for those daily episodes coming up later in January. And I've got a lot of other things that I know that you're going to enjoy as well. So please continue to listen. We seem to have reached nearly a critical mass, I guess, as far as a number of people who like the Facebook page at the Magic Word Podcast, and also those who have signed up for the newsletter. It's kind of slowing down as far as the pace of those who have subscribed. If you have not yet subscribed to the pod letter, please go to the magicwordpodcast.com, and there you'll see a link where that you can subscribe to our pod letter and keep up to date with what's happening from week to week, and some suggestions from the archives where that you can go back and listen to some great stories from people that we've had over the past 8 years or so. And so again, Happy New Year to everybody, and until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember that it's never too late. This is Scotty out.